Welcome to Mobility Month, sponsored by Red River on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Now here's your host, Tom Tepper.
With all those mobile devices and teleworking days, data security has become a real worry for federal IT shops. Or it should be. Now the National Institute of Standards and Technology has issued new guidance. It covers the best techniques and technologies for securing data and remote devices. Computer scientist Maruja Supaya tells me more about that new data guidance.
So the original publication was released back in 2010 timeline. At the time, mobile device wasn't widely available, the smartphones and tablets and so on. It was just the beginning of that that technology wave. So we decided to update our publication to include those kind of components, because as you know, those devices are widely used these days.
And what did you find was most out of date with respect to the controls and procedures that were in place prior to the mobile revolution?
I think the controls and the risk management process is the same. It's just the technology has evolved. Things that we tend to do on desktop and desktop and laptop systems are not being implemented equally on the mobile device, smartphones and tablets. The controls are still required to protect the level of information that would have been processed and transmitted on those devices, but some of the technical mechanism for safeguarding that information is slightly different on mobile device because of their architecture. There's a different architecture on mobile device versus traditional desktop and laptop system.
So what are some specific things that should be done to mobile devices that use an ARM processor and different operating systems and so on, that and they also have all these interconnected peripherals and you never know whether they're on or off? What do you do to mobile, or what are agencies failing to do or not doing often enough that they should be doing?
So first of all, being able to inventory all of those devices, understand which device are accessing their resource, the enterprise resource, being able to account for those devices. If those devices are owned by the organization, they should have the standard capabilities for managing the devices, as part of their inventory, being able to patch them, be able to instantiate security policy on those devices. For example, being able to detect that the device has not been rooted or jailbroken, being able to protect the data, potentially sensitive data being processed on those devices, enforcing strong authentication on them, and also have the ability to remotely wipe them if those devices are lost or no longer being used to access the enterprise data.
And what about the legacy types of remote devices, say PCs that are in employees' homes that telework, or the laptops that we all used to carry, or I guess a lot of us still do, that are fundamentally different from mobile phones and tablets? Again, as you say, the way they're architectured, are there some things in common that need to be done?
So the way how you manage those devices, the tools that you're using will be slightly different, but the end goal is the same. It's being able to do the traditional things that we do, having firewalls, having those enabled, being able to configure those devices so that they run with a reduced attack surface on them, being able to patch them, being able to enforce strong authentication of those devices. If the devices are being used remotely, having some kind of a data protection technology on those systems to protect the data at rest, just in case the device are stolen or misplaced. So traditionally, they are the same. The mechanism by which you enforce those policy or those configuration baseline will be slightly different between desktop laptop versus mobile device.
We're speaking with NIST computer scientist Maruja Supaya. Talk about the guidance that you have come out with at NIST. What form does it take? Which publications are being updated? And are they in draft form?
So the two publications that we are referring to is NIST 847, special publication 846, a guide to enterprise telework, remote access, and bring your own device security. And then this companion publication, special publication 800-114, it's targeted toward user devices that are being used to telework or being brought onto the enterprise network. So one publication, 846, focus more on the enterprise, on the infrastructure that organization would have to have in place in order to support this use case. And companion publication, 800-114, focus on end user device. What can the end user do on their personal device or mobile device in order to protect the type of information that they are accessing from the organization?
And crime and interaction between Apple and the FBI aside, it's probably a good thing that more and more devices are having native encryption for purposes of protecting data that might be lost when a device gets dropped.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, data security is really critical for these devices because it's the same type of information that you tend to have access to on your enterprise network is now being processed on this mobile device. And as people are using these devices, you know, anytime, anywhere, you know, from most of the perspective, we want to make sure that we have that same level of protection of the data if they are being cached on those devices. Encryption is key to help safeguard that information should the device get lost or being misplaced.
And because many of these pieces are government-owned or essentially government-owned because they're being provisioned by the government and used by a federal employee for official business, what do you recommend or what is NIST recommending with respect to the ability to decrypt those devices or having the passwords available to management should that need arise? Suppose somebody is disgruntled and leaves, or suppose someone, say, passes away and the device comes into the hands of the agency.
So depending on the solution that they're using, they may have key recovery mechanism as part of some of the solution. So if it's an enterprise-owned device and the device is managed centrally by the organization, most of the enterprise encryption technology would have a pretty good key management system that will allow them to be able to access those devices. Should the user also forget the password or the mechanism to authenticate with those devices, and that could potentially be due to failure of the hardware also. And of course, there's always the need for having backups and other mechanisms that you could revert to in order to recover that type of information should the encryption fail.
And this new guidance, is it in draft form? Are you looking for comments at this point, or is it in final form?
It is. These two publications are in draft right now. We appreciate any comments that we can get from the community. And the deadline for the comments is April the 15th.
NIST computer scientist Maruja Supaya. Read more and share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends. I'm Tom Temin. The Army is expanding its use of wireless Wi-Fi networks, both indoors and outdoors. By getting rid of heavy cabling that takes hours to install, the Army is hoping to make command posts and tactical units more mobile and agile. Lieutenant Colonel Mark Henderson is the product manager for WinT Increment 1.
Command post Wi-Fi is an amazing disruptive technology. And essentially, when you think about today's operations with expeditionary communications, things that reduce size, weight, and power and become force multipliers to more mobile units, whether they're airborne units or other units that are advancing in today's modern scenarios, they could rely heavily on Wi-Fi. It's important because what it offers is the ability to reduce the amount of time to to set up a brigade command talk can be reduced from hours to about 30 minutes. Classically, what you'd find is in order to lay cable, you're talking about up to 17 boxes of 1,000-foot reels of Cat 5 cable weighing about 255 pounds. You figure the cables have to be cut, laid out, configured, plugged in. And then on top of that, protective flooring has to be laid down. And all of this can be very, very time-consuming. CP Wi-Fi is a disruptive technology that enables units to connect and communicate faster.
So we're talking about when the Army gets to a place that's away from a base and out in the field, for example, to set up ready for some sort of operation.
I see it being used whether it's CONUS or OCONUS. And when I say that, because soldiers are going to be training CONUS before they ever deploy OCONUS. So the ability to learn and train on the technology CONUS before it actually deploys is a critical step in readiness.
So you would hope to get rid of wiring pretty much anywhere the Army communicates eventually?
I can't speak to the Army's requirement, but I can tell you that it is a disruptive technology that's being placed in the hands of the soldiers. I could try to explain what it could do, but, you know, sometimes the words coming straight from the soldiers themselves. In this case, the commander for the 2nd Brigade Combat Team, 1st Armored Division, when he was asked why wireless is so important, and he said, quote, because the speed in which the Tactical Operations Center comes up is absolutely critical. He goes on to say that it used to be that after a command post infrastructure went up, we'd all kind of sit there, in essence, waiting. And by no means that doesn't mean that they're sitting around doing nothing. There's a lot of mission prep to do, but the waiting comes in terms of the network and how long will that come up. He says with command post Wi-Fi, they're getting to the point where systems are coming up as fast as the command post infrastructure itself is going up. And he goes on to say it's a game changer, truthfully. That's actually coming from a commander that is actually assessing this equipment himself.
So before they would get there and set up all this Cat 5 cabling, running it around on the ground and making sure it's covered so people don't step on it and cut it, what do they do now when they get to a TOC, a Tactical Operations Center? What does it look like to set up CP Wi-Fi?
Sir, I could tell you what I saw with my own eyes at the last NIE 16-1. Essentially, what you would find is a scenario where the unit would go ahead and, let's say in the case of conducting a jump where attack would move forward or a talk would leap forward, the unit would break down. As the unit was breaking down, the command center that was actually utilizing Wi-Fi could actually stay connected longer, literally up until the last minutes. When that equipment came down, it would go ahead and leap forward. Setup time was significantly reduced. Once the system was assembled in minutes, realistically, the talk would operate on a closed network up until the full network could actually be established. Once the full network was established, it was ready to go. I mean, the TAC connected fairly quickly, and it was operational within minutes thereafter. Another thing I thought was very interesting is the sort of thing that we take for granted on a daily basis. As I was moving around as recently as yesterday, and many of us do, we would take our wireless laptop, we'd move from one location to another, whether it's from one room to another. In this case, what I saw was a soldier that had a question about something that he was doing, actually picked up his laptop from where he was sitting, walked from one end of the talk all the way to the other end of the talk. He was still connected, and he was still doing what it was he needed to do. He asked his questions. Had a couple of answers provided, and then he walked back across the talk and he sat back down. Now imagine in a scenario where you had miles of dedicated cable that was cut and laid, and he was connected by virtue of that cable. And so by virtue of the fact that he's able to operate wirelessly versus connected to a wire, the amount of time that was lost to provide mission support was reduced to a much more negligible amount than what it would have been previously. And that right there is truly disruptive and game-changing technology.
Read more and share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends. I'm Tom Temin. We're speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Mark Henderson, product manager for WinT Increment 1 in the Army. And when the talk picks up and moves, the Tactical Operations Center may pick up and move as it would because the Army is a mobile force. What happened to all that wire that had been laid? Was it just left there and then you used new wiring at the next location?
No, sir. I mean, cable is constantly, when the site's broken down, all the equipment is assessed, it's rolled up, and it is put away up until the time of the jump. And so cable's typically reused, and that brings up another point. You know, especially in a battlefield context, when you're going through jumps and you're going through mobile operations, you have cable that can be laid down and then reeled up and laid down and reeled up and laid down and reeled up. And at what point, if there is a kink that is in that wire, and let's say you have a communications flaw, let's say after the talk is already established, the floors are laid down, where you have wires that are just not connecting properly, that could be a bit of an issue because now you're going to have to potentially hunt for that wire, trace it down, find the faulty wire, go ahead and replace it, remove it. You know, when you're going to a wireless scenario, you don't have to dig for cables that in some cases are closely run together, so identifying exact cables can become challenging. You have multiple cables that are running all over the place. It's one thing to actually have seen it with my own eyes versus trying to describe it. But now you've got a scenario where you don't have to hunt for those wires.
Yeah, that sounds like it must be a pretty tedious task to lay them down and roll them up again every time you move on. And the components of CP Wi-Fi, are they basically commercial Wi-Fi parts?
That's exactly what it is, sir. And you know, we work very closely with industry. Industry obviously builds excellent equipment. And because of the speed at which industry is developing this new equipment, we work very closely with government agencies, amongst them the NSA, to actually identify solutions to build, to utilize commercial technology and overlapping pieces of equipment, software, to actually produce very, very secure architecture and systems to be able to get this technology out much more faster than it would be otherwise, but also it would be very secure.
And you can communicate over Army classified networks using this and get and take data from them for use that might be needed in the field, correct?
Yes, sir. This is truly a disruptive technology that supports global expeditionary communications and the demands of soldiers nowadays, where you have a need for equipment that is smaller, uses less power, that's more modular. Essentially, the smaller the capability that you can actually load onto an aircraft and, let's say, forward deploy. Obviously, when you think in terms of cost savings and the amount of fuel that would be necessary, plus the amount of stuff that you can pack onto that aircraft in the form of either humanitarian support equipment or other mission equipment that's necessary, now you've got additional space for additional multipliers that previously might not have been thought of. We work very closely with industry to bring these game-changing technologies to the force. And in addition to the disruptive technology that we're placing all the way to the forward edge of the battle area in the hands of the soldiers, this does have a humanitarian application going to support missions that the 50 states and four territories would have to deal with, let's say, after a result of a hurricane or other humanitarian effort where this technology could also support them. Amazing capability.
Lieutenant Colonel Mark Henderson is the program product manager for the Army's WIN-T Increment 1. Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends. I'm Tom Temin.